Welcome to The Spot, KALW's weekly space for the best in public radio podcasts and storytelling. I'm your host, Ashley Ann Krigbaum. You probably know Al Letson as the host and creator of the radio show and podcast State of the Reunion, which just won a Peabody Award, and also as the host of the Center for Investigative Reporting's new show, Reveal. Looking beyond radio, though, he's known to dabble in all kinds of other storytelling trades. And now, he's launching a new podcast where he explores with joy all of the stories, writers, friends, music, and really everything that influences him for our listening pleasure. The show is called Thing, and he's given KALW listeners the first peek at episode number one before the podcast launches next week. How cool is that? Quick warning, there's a lot of talk about childhood bullying and a few curse words coming. Nothing scandalous, though. I'll let Al take it from here.
My name is Al Letson, and I do a lot of things. But all my life, people have told me not to.
Let me get this straight. You're going to be a poet, an actor, a playwright, a radio host, a storyteller, a comic book writer. Man, you can't do everything, Al.
But I want to do everything. And that's what this podcast is about. Everything I want to do. Stories, radio drama, documentary pieces, and interviews with some of the most interesting people on the planet. I told you, we gonna do Thing. And sometimes I'll have my trusty DJ with me, Willie Evans Jr.
I'm not a DJ.
Whatever, you make beats. He's the DJ, I'm the rapper.
No, you're not, and no, I'm not.
You never know, because we're gonna be doing Thing.
You like Eddie Murphy now. You're trying to play every character in the movie. You can't do that, Al. You can't do that. You just got to pick one. I need to know what you're doing. I need to know what you do, 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 what you
do. I'm Al Letson, and you are listening to Thing. All right, now, first thing we need to get straight is how to pronounce it. It's not everything. It's Thing, as in Thing I want to do. A southern colloquialism, if you will. And if you ain't from the south, it may feel kind of funny coming out your mouth, but...
Did you just say that, yo?
What?
Never mind.
And ladies and gentlemen, that is my occasional co-host, Willie Evans Jr.
Why I gotta be occasional, though?
Because it's an occasion when you walk in the room.
Nice.
I know, I'm quick like that. Anyway, so on Thing, we gonna do Thing. Because I do a lot of stuff. Poetry, theater, radio, short stories, interviews, comic books. And my hair is luxurious.
Sit back there and say my hair ain't luxurious when you know it is.
And today, I am telling a story. So, Willie Evans Jr., theme music, please.
All right.
Hi. I'm glad you're here because it's...
Wait. Willie, is that Maria from Sesame Street?
Yeah. Just a, cool little sample. I thought I'd make it a theme for when you're telling a story.
The Maria.
I mean, I don't have her in the studio, but yeah.
Dude, that's Maria.
I know.
That is my first love. I mean,
Maria, say it loud and this music play.
Hey, dog. Hey, we're in a small space. We're in a booth. Just don't, please.
Can I finish?
All right.
Say it soft, and it's almost like praying.
Are you serious? You know, you're a grown-ass man in love with the lady from Sesame Street.
Man, if you don't know, then you don't know. Next thing, you're going to be talking about Thelma from Good Times, and I'm going to have to cut your ass.
No, I'm with you right there. I'm with you. But can we get back to the theme music and maybe the actual story?
Sure. Fine.
Hi. I'm glad you're here because it's story time. Okay, you're all set, aren't you?
Yes, Maria, my love, I am all set. So our first story here on Thing is called Big Brother Almighty. But to tell this story, I have to go back.
way back. You see, today everybody calls me Al, but when I was a kid, everyone called me Alfie.
What's it all about, Alfie?
A friend of mine tried to give me this CD recently and I wanted to strangle him.
Alfie.
I have heard that song so many times. Anyway, from 0 to 7, I was an only child. I was a little lonely. I had this crazy imagination. Crazy. I was the original Calvin and Hobbes. I would build these imaginary worlds and play in them all day long. But I had a longing, a deep desire in my little adolescent heart. I wanted a sibling. I grew up watching my three sons, Family Affair, Good Times, and they all had siblings. Yeah, they fought occasionally, but they had fun, lots of fun, and I wanted a sibling more than anything. Now, I didn't understand how all that works. I mean, I was 6 or 7 years old, no clue. But I knew if it was going to happen, my parents had to help that process. So I lobbied them hard. And let me tell you, at that age, I could be the cutest kid in the world, or I could be the most irritating child in the world.
Please, 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 please.
Anyway, my lobbying paid off because one day my parents told me they were going to adopt. This was a wondrous thing. This was great. I mean, I got a ready-made kid. No baby stuff, straight to playing with toys and having fun. I don't remember the process of picking kids. I vaguely recall meeting one or two other kids, and they were younger than me and didn't seem all that fun. And then I met Lawan. Lawan was 3 years older than me, and at 10 years old, he was cool. So cool that instantly I wanted to be like him. First, we hung out for a day, then a weekend, then a couple months, and those were the best days. I had just gotten this new bike, so I let him ride that, and I rode my old one, and we would just cruise around the neighborhood and have a good time. And when the process was done, Lawan was officially my brother. I went everywhere in the neighborhood and introduced him as my new brother, and all the kids in the neighborhood thought he was cool. I mean, he was from the hood, and we lived in the suburbs. He was tough. He cursed. He knew how to talk to the ladies. He was like the Fonz.
Hey!
All the kids loved him. All the kids except Gerard. Now, Gerard was a neighborhood bully. He lived in a cul-de-sac, and every house in the circle was members of his family. Most of the neighborhood kids didn't go down there because Gerard was king, and he had an army to back him up. At 16, Gerard towered over all of us kids, and we were scared to death. Now, Gerard never touched me. He would just always pick on me, call me names, laugh at my little bike because it was light blue, and he had all his cousins chase me around, and it was no fun, so I definitely stayed away. But now, I had a big brother. So I went down there to show my brother off, and when Gerard saw Lawan, it was like two pit bulls circling each other. There was tension in the air. Now, Lawan at this age is like 10 years old. Gerard is 16, so he was way bigger than Lawan. But my brother does not know what backing down means. As custom, Gerard started picking on me, and my brother would not stand for it. He started calling Gerard names and talking about his mother, pushing all of the buttons that I didn't even know existed. It was amazing. Finally, the big bully is getting his due. Yes, I have a big brother. Then Gerard, the 16-year-old, punched my brother, the 10-year-old, in the face.
Oh, snap!
Lawan fell on the ground and bounced back up, ready to fight. And Gerard was ready too, but the rest of Gerard's family pulled him away. They didn't want him fighting someone so young and told us to get out of there. Eventually, Lawan and I got on our bikes and rode home. But before we did, Lawan looked Gerard in the eyes and said, I'm gonna get you back. I was gonna tell my parents, but Lawan told me not to. So I just did what he told me to and shut up. That night I tried to comfort him and tell him what a jerk Gerard was. But Lawan was too mad to hear it. He told me to shut up. And then he said, the only reason why he stayed with my family, why he decided to go along with the adoption, is because he wanted my bike. And then he proceeded to beat me up. Nothing major in the master's degree I've earned in beatdown victimization. This was merely just the introductory course. It gets harder from here. It struck me that we had just adopted a pit bull. I mean, I thought about telling my parents, but then either they'd send him back or I'd just get beat up again, and I didn't want either one of those, so I just shut up. The next 3 years, Luan and I got to know each other better. He established himself as the alpha male, and I was more than happy to play the background. When he was in a bad mood, he could be brutal. But most of the time, he was all right, as long as he had my bike, which I never got back. Then one day, my parents tell us that they are having a baby. What? A baby? A baby? Now, I'm 10, and in a matter of 3 years, I went from being the only child to a middle child. Who does that happen to? Me, obviously. And with my folks having a baby, we were moving into a bigger house. So for weeks, we packed up the house, and on the last day, my parents let Luan and I go play one last time in the neighborhood and say goodbye to everyone. And when we got in the backyard to grab our bikes, Luan turned to me and said, "Listen, I want you to go down to the cul-de-sac. I want you to start a fight with Gerard and just wait." A fight with Gerard? Are you crazy? Are you crazy? Now, Gerard is 19 years old. I'm 10, and my brother is telling me to go start a fight with him. Now, in the 3 years we've been living in this house together, we never really went down to Gerard's cul-de-sac. I mean, every now and then, but on a whole, we stayed away from it. And now my brother is telling me to go down there and start a fight? I told him, "No, not doing it." And my brother grabbed me by the shirt, looked at me and said, "If you don't go down there and start a fight with Gerard, I'm going to start a fight with you." When my brother made a threat, he always followed through. Make no mistake, if he told me that he was going to get me that night, oh, he got me. And therefore, looking at him and thinking about the damage that he could do to me for the rest of my life and the short damage that Gerard might do to me while I was in the cul-de-sac, it's a no-brainer. I was going to the cul-de-sac. Immediately after that, Luan got on his bike and rode away. I have no idea where he went at the time. I got on my bike and slowly rode down to the cul-de-sac. Now, I gotta tell you, like, that's a, like, 2-minute ride, but it must have taken me at least 10 to 15 minutes to get down there. And when I got there, all Gerard's cousins, the kids, were out in the cul-de-sac, and they saw me coming, and they started teasing me about my little blue bike. Now, beyond the cul-de-sac was a park that all of us used to go play basketball or tennis or just run around and play football. What I didn't know at the time is my brother had rode his bike all the way from our house into the park. He then climbed up a steep hill and got into the backyard of one of the houses in the cul-de-sac where he could see everything that was going on. So I'm there and Gerard's cousins are teasing me and I'm not paying them any mind, and I walk up to Gerard and I start talking about his mama.
"Your mama's so stupid. Your mama wearing combat boots. Your mama's so dumb. Your mama's so old. Her memory's in black and white."
And Gerard got angry and he started to move in on me, and everybody was like, "Ooh,
snap. Gerard, you gonna let him talk to you like that?"
Everybody started to move away as Gerard started to move in closer. And just as Gerard's shadow hit me, I saw my brother's hand tap him from behind. And when Gerard turned around, Luan had a brick in his hand and he bashed it up against his head. Gerard fell to the ground with a cry and everyone else backed up, screaming.
"Oh, son, you see that?
Luan stood over Gerard as he rolled on the ground, blood seeping out of a cut on his head. He looked down at the older boy and kicked him really hard in the stomach and said, "I told you I'd get you back. Don't mess with the Letson boys." He then grabbed my bike, told me to get on the handlebars, and we rode as fast as we could back to our house. Now, when we got back to the house,
My parents had already packed everything up, and it was time to leave. They put my bike in the back of the truck. My brother told him that he left his in the park, so they drove around, picked it up, and then we went to our new house and unpacked. That night, in our new bedroom, everything was different. The sounds, the smells, everything was strange. We got in our bunk beds to go to sleep, and Luan leaned down from the top bunk and said, "No one is ever going to pick on you or beat you up again." Now, in retrospect, he probably should have said, "No one is ever going to pick on you or beat you up again except me." But I digress. At that moment, it felt like a revelation. Yeah, we had adopted this crazy pit bull of a kid. But he was my pit bull. He was my brother.
Yo, man, we've been friends for what? Like,
I don't know, like 20 some odd years, something like that. Ever since that?
No.
What?
Do not tell that story.
Why are you so sensitive?
No, I'm not. I'm just saying.
Willie.
I don't want to hear that story.
There's nothing to that story.
No, that's besides the point. What I'm saying is we've been friends forever, and I don't think I ever met your brother, man.
Nah, because he was probably out beating somebody else up.
Word. He still get down like that, though?
Nah, he has matured.
Okay, all right, good. I mean, because if it was still like that, I would have your back.
What y'all doing in here?
Oh! Oh, you scared me there, Juan.
Oh, hey. That's Juan as in your brother?
Yeah.
I gotta go. I gotta pick my kids up, bye.
Hey, why you sweating, man?
It's just hot in here, man. But I gotta go.
Yeah, but hey, but before you do, drop that beat.
All right.
Hey, what's the matter with him? Somebody bothering him? You need me to handle it, little brother?
No, Juan, I'm good.
I'm just saying, you know.
Nah, man, I'm good. Let me finish this up. Okay, so before I let go, this first episode of Earthine, I gotta tease what's coming up next, cause you got to come back in 2 weeks. Interviews and storytelling with three of my favorite writers, and
we're gonna rock this like three the hard way, like this show.
This show.
Matt Fraction talks about his book, Sex Criminals.
Sex is weird and funny and strange and scary for everybody the first time, but it's this thing you don't really realize until later.
At your age, you're going to be having a lot of urges. You're going to want to take off your clothes and touch each other. But if you do touch each other, you will get chlamydia and die.
David Walker brings back the 70s and the quintessential blaxploitation character, Shaft.
I described him, somebody recently, as a cross between Raymond Chandler's Philip Marlowe and the Punisher.
Stay away from black hunkies with big flat feet.
Some people don't like the way they are.
And Kelly Sue DeConnick tells us how she writes so many kick-ass comic books.
I am so simple. I am forever writing to get to the same moment. It is the moment when she is down and bloody and no one thinks she's going to get back up. And she gets back up and the look on her face is, you are a dead man. You cannot keep me down is the moment I am forever writing for.
Some people don't like the way.
And that, my friends, is the first episode of Earthang. You can reach us on Twitter. That's at Earthang, E-R-R-T-H-A-N-G. And at our website, earthangshow.com, E-R-R-T-H-A-N-G show.com. If you dig this podcast, go to iTunes, write a review. Seriously, it
helps. Also, I'm the host of another podcast radio show, Reveal. It's definitely more serious. I get to work with the best investigative journalists from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. So subscribe to that, too.
Do you want me to say it like you say it or like a white person says it?
You can say it like a white person says it.
Everything.
Okay, now say it like I say it.
I just feel like I'm getting myself into trouble.
Why?
Everything.
It's actually not a black and white thing. It's a southerner thing.
Everything. But I don't know white southerners to say everything.
You're failing so badly. And you're tired, so I'm going to let you go.
Earthang was produced by yours truly, with music by Willie Evans Jr. Our business manager is Bree Burge. Special shout out to my man Jay Breezy. Thanks for the assist. And Mr. Sean Birch, sir, your hair will never be as luxurious as mine.
Sit back there and say my hair ain't luxurious when you know it is.
I'm Al Edson, and you, my friend, yes, you listening right now, you are just Earthang.
Earthang officially launches next week, so you'll have to wait until then to subscribe to the podcast. In the meantime, all you need to know about Earthang can be found at earthangshow.com. That's earthangshow.com. A big special thanks to Al Letson for sharing Earthang with us before you can hear it anywhere else. You're tuned to The Spot, KALW's weekly space for the best in public radio podcasts and storytelling. I'm Ashley Ann Krigbaum. Sunday is Mother's Day. This is the time when every year I start feeling truly guilty for mostly one egregious misstep: not calling my mother enough. Hard as I try, it's just really difficult for me to remember to. KALW correspondent Sandeep Roy recently told the story about his own woes with the technologies he uses to speak with his mother. And he also shares his observations on how the way we communicate affects his larger community. From his series, Dispatch from Kolkata, here's Sandeep.
My mother's phone has just stopped working. As in, the caller can hear her, but she cannot hear a thing. And my mother has never bothered to learn how to text, so this is how we communicate now. It's like something out of a spy film. I call. She answers and says she still cannot hear a thing.
Hello? Hello? Kichu shunte pacchi na? Hello? Kichu shunte pacchi na?
Now that she's been alerted, though, I send her a message with my question. For example, do we have oyster sauce at home? She calls me back and gives me her reply blindly, like floating a bottle with a message into the sea. I respond with a text message saying, okay. It's my version of saying, roger that. She sends back a random keystroke text message to say basically, over and out. Then, distrustful of this one-way process, she makes my sister call me anyway.
I have a cryptic message from Ma. We have sauce.
Of course, this makes the entire carefully set up handshake protocol moot. But communication in the 21st century is no laughing matter. This is Sandeep Roy in Kolkata. We grew up in a world where phones routinely did not work. We would keep getting a wrong number. We had cross connections where we listened to other people's conversations for hours. Phones would give up the ghost at the mere sight of storm clouds. And once it died, there was no telling when the government telephone department would deign to fix it. In a country where 600 million people had only 2 million landlines, the laws of demand and supply were against us. Indian politician Shashi Tharoor told a story about that at the launch of his book, The Elephant, the Tiger, and the Cell Phone, about how the communication minister told a parliamentarian in 1984 that phones were a luxury in India, not a right.
That the government had no obligation to provide better service,
And although the honourable member was dissatisfied with his telephone service, he was free to return his instrument, since there was an 8-year-long waiting list of people waiting for the telephone.
Mobile phones changed all that. It leapfrogged India into the 21st century. There are over 900 million mobile phones in the country, compared to some 28 million landlines. The tele-density of the country is over 73%. The phone is no longer a luxury, it's a necessity, actually more than a necessity. It's an addiction. I don't know what to do with myself anymore in public transport without my phone. It's a status symbol. Apple had its first midnight launch in India with cheerleaders and pom-poms for iPhone 6 in a country where stories constantly remind us 2/3 of the population live on less than $2 a day, as CNN-IBN reports.
According to reports, Apple has shipped more than 50,000 units to India to take care of the expected demand until the second wave of devices reach the Indian shores. This after the company couldn't meet the demand last year when iPhone 5S Gold came to the markets.
My great aunt eloped from home in the 1940s. She tells me that story of her great romance and how her brother smuggled letters to and fro in his socks. All I can think is, my God, how did she do it without a phone? Forget an elopement. Is even romance possible anymore without a smartphone? When phones were a luxury, we knew how to work around them because we couldn't depend on them. Now we are just helpless without them. We don't even know anyone's numbers anymore. My mother still charges her defunct phone. She needs it to tell the time at night. Once she used a wristwatch for that. But the phone promised to take care of all those needs. Phones might be getting smarter, but I'm not sure if we are. This is Sandeep Roy in Kolkata.
You can find older episodes of Dispatch from Kolkata at our website, kalw.org. And you can also subscribe to the podcast now on iTunes. Just search for Sandeep Roy. That's it for today's episode of The Spot. You can find this episode and more at kalw.org. Look at the homepage for the little blue letters that spell out The Spot. And tell me what you want to hear on The Spot. If you have a suggestion for a podcast we should feature, please drop me a line at thespot@kalw.org. Thanks very much to those of you who have emailed me in the past few weeks. I'll definitely be airing some of your suggestions in the coming month. The Spot is taking a 2-week break, but we'll have more stories for you on Thursday, May 28th, same time, only on KALW San Francisco.